Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother, Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, good. Apologies for the break. That's partly due to me and the Easter holidays, but we missed some... the game sort of cancelled, the big game sort of cancelled each other out, didn't they? The Sporting. Yeah. And anyway. But yeah, apologies for the absence, listeners, because yeah, that was mainly due to me. But yes, I'm very happy to be back.
Very happy to be back. We did miss some interesting games, also some interesting like talking points, which hopefully we'll be able to kind of catch up on in the midst of the game chat this week. And to help us do so, we've got a big friend of the show, Patrick Ribeiro, joining us. Patrick, how are you, sir? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on once more. And getting excited now with football and all that. So always happy to come on and waffle.
Absolutely. And you came on very recently with Barney and Kevin. So listeners will be very used to Patrick on the show. Gents, we've got a lot to get through, as always. And I think we're going to start with the two biggest wins of the weekend. And shall we start, as we always do, at the top of the table, albeit very, very slender lead at the top of the table with Sporting, who got a 5-0 away win at Boavista with four goals from Victor Gyökeres. Gents, I did mention this on Twitter, but this is one of the bits of news that we weren't able to cover at the time while we were off. But of course, Boavista have a new manager. A Scottish manager, if you weren't aware, called Stuart Baxter, a very interesting character who's been around the world managing different clubs. Feel like he was most successful in South Africa, and now finds his way to Portugal to manage Boavista with only four games of the season left when he took over. The reason I bring it up is because when he joined, he gave quite a colourful press conference. I don't know if either of you saw anything that came out of that, but one of the quotes that came out of that, because he was asked about what's his plan for the Sporting game, and one of his quotes was how to stop Gyökeres. He said, "We're going to park two buses and see if Victor Gyökeres can break through them." Well, 2 weeks later and four goals, we have our answer that yes, he can. It was a crazy game. I mean, for Boavista, obviously in a relegation battle, not the result they would have wanted, but I think in many ways an unstoppable performance from Sporting, Patrick. And I think actually it is worth kind of looking at this game with some seriousness as well, because I think not only this performance, but the performance of the last game as well, perhaps only the first half of Sporting's last games, probably two of the best performances we've seen from Sporting under Rui Borges. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's definitely how I saw it.
Yeah, definitely, especially this one. Start to finish, it was just Sporting all the way through, and then you kept pressing, and it was one of those. It's the type of performance I like to see. Sometimes you see teams go 2-3-0 up and they take their foot off the gas, at Sporting just kept going, and I think that's how it should be. So it was an important victory. I was kind of looking at it like, well, I don't know, the whole narrative was there for Boavista to get a shock result with their great escape and new manager. Suddenly they've got players that they've signed finally. And at this time of the season, there's no easy game at all. It just felt like both teams really had something to play for. And originally you would expect Sporting to do what they did, but you just never know. So I was kind of a little bit wary of that and expecting Boavista to throw a curveball, especially off the back of Benfica's result, as I'm sure we'll get onto further on in the podcast. But there would have been a lot of pressure on Sporting side to not just win, but also do so in a similar manner, convincingly, for the sake of confidence. So Sporting can actually feel like, yeah, they are looking Benfica eye in the eye. Because Benfica, other than a rare draw a couple games ago, they've looked really good. So an important display for Sporting. Obviously, 3 points always welcome at this time of the season. But the performance, the manner in which the players played was really good as well, and bodes well for the future.
Definitely. And Bonnie, I tell you what, I'll quickly get you on Boavista first. because it was a bit of a shame from their perspective. Obviously, they beat Ferenc in the previous game. They've got a huge game coming up against AVS in their next game. If they beat AVS, it puts them on equal points with AVS, and I believe they go ahead on the head-to-head rule. So basically, what I'm saying to you is it could be happening. The Great Escape that you predicted not long ago, it could still be on, and I think it is obviously not necessarily off the back of this game, but in terms of what we've seen from them the couple of wins that they've had in the last few games or so, they've given themselves a fighting chance.
Yeah, the performances have been good in general. And I wonder if that's why this game went so badly. I mean, I want to question Stuart Baxter's definition of a bus, if he's describing two buses coming up against Sporting in this game, because that's not what happened. And I wonder if it's because they had this confidence. Maybe they wanted to try and get something more than a scrape a draw. The back line in this game was all over the place, and I think that's, I don't know, I was looking at predicting number 13, Froningen, who has been pretty decent since coming into the team for them, but in this game he just looked all the back line was just an absolute shambles, and he seemed to be stepping out of position quite a lot in it, and Gyökeres was just finding so much space. So yeah, I think maybe you never really look at the games against the big teams in sort of deciding the fate of a struggling team, and but whether this is going to absolutely shatter any confidence that was building, whether it was that confidence that made this result happen, I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, the Bovista's highest rated player in this game was the goalkeeper despite shipping five, and but that's just, I think he has been a good player, Vakšić, since he's come in as well, and I think most of the players they have signed since January that have contributed. I think Stuart Baxter seems to be getting. See, I like the teams Baxter's put out more than what Lito Vidigal does. There seems to be more of a. I was going to say more of a. It seems like more of a solid team, or well, more thought out team. I'm saying this after this result and this performance, but in general, I think that has been the difference. So yeah, I don't know, but I do worry a little bit about how calamitous this performance became, particularly in the defence, which has been actually probably one of their strongest areas since January. I don't know, it's a tough one, but yeah, I'm still got my belief for Boavista. I just thought this performance was so bad.
It was. I think it is worth pointing out, though, because it's not just a case of, the weaker team getting blown away. I did also kind of. I mean, it might sound really harsh, but I did also think that there were a lot of things where they were really poor. They should have been a lot better, and particularly those two centre backs, who I just thought were. There was not a lot of synergy between them. I mean, what you want in a game like this, where you're huge underdogs and you're coming up against, the monster that is Viktor Gyökeres and all the other talented players that Sporting have, is you need that defensive stability and what you perhaps might lack in terms of ability as a defender compared to your counterparts. You need to make up for an organisation and commitment and dedication, all those things. And seeing the kind of holes in that aspect of their game was what I thought was kind of more disheartening compared to any I don't think the scoreline really matters. Like you say, it doesn't matter that they lose to Sporting. It doesn't even really matter that they concede five goals. What matters is that they kind of show a performance that at least the fans can clap them off the pitch for and give them confidence for the next game. And the fact that that wasn't there for me was a bit of a disappointment. Again, might be very harsh. I don't know. Maybe you guys disagree with me, but that's kind of what I thought. Patrick, I don't know how sick you are of talking about Viktor Gyökeres, but we have to, right? We have to. Some stuff that I saw over the weekend, I'm not sure how much this means to people, but very interesting stats. I mean, he's now the top scorer in all of Europe's top divisions. There's like a European Golden Boot competition which tracks all the goals in the top divisions around Europe, and he's the top scorer in that with 38 goals in the league. That's 10 more than his nearest rival in Mo Salah. This season, He has, of course, 38 goals in just 30 league appearances, 52 goals and 12 assists in 48 appearances in all competitions at club level so far. To put that into context, last season, he got 43 goals in 50 appearances in all competitions for Sporting. And we all thought that was pretty amazing. So the fact that he's kind of already comfortably outdoing that in a season where his team hasn't performed at the same level as what they did last season is pretty crazy statistic. I bring this up because we do see a lot. I saw a particular tweet this week where people were kind of looking for maybe potential red flags around Vitor Gyökeres, or maybe things that suggest that he's kind of maybe not all that he seems. And of course, we see the kind of constant discourse about whether the fact that he plays in Portugal kind of is a bit of a smokescreen, or do you know what I mean? It kind of makes him seem a little bit better than he is. I'm just interested to get your perspective on this, if you're not sick about talking about it, because I believe that he is the real deal. But taking that all into account, like where he is this season, what he's achieved, the player he is now, and also like what, like where that could get him to, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he is incredible. He's probably, like, if we were to list all the players that have played at the top of their game in the Portuguese league, and of which many have gone on to do great things at top European clubs, I think we'd all put Gyökeres like right at the top. Not the very top, like, of course, that will always be debatable between a few other names, but in terms of his impact, it is right up there. And like, I hear it, it is the Portuguese league, and with how globalised football is nowadays, and with the amount of top players that once came out of the Portuguese league and then went on to flop elsewhere, there's always that little bit of wariness around these names. It sort of makes it look, especially when a player like Gyökeres is slapping 3 goals one day, 4 goals the other day, you kind of think, well, what's going on in this league? Like, it's great that he scored this many goals, but like, what's the standard? And obviously, the Portuguese football standard isn't, it doesn't have the reputation that the top 5 leagues will have, for example. But it is what it is. I don't think you can get away from that tag until you finally make that move. And the sad thing about football is that, for example, Gyökeres could make that move and might genuinely be the real deal. But if he goes to the wrong club in the wrong sort of circumstances, immediately he'll just be deemed like a flop. But if he goes to the right club in the right circumstances, then the whole Portuguese league debate is put to bed, and Gyökeres is what it is. And I hope that he does find the right club. I think it's beyond obvious that he will leave at the end of this season. There's still a few that hope he will hang around Lisbon, but I don't see it. But yeah, no, I think he's a great player. I'm blessed to have seen him in the Portuguese league, especially me to have seen him slap them in for my team. Hopefully he gets to the 100 goal mark, but most importantly, hopefully he has a title or two at the end of it to also attribute all those goals to. I do see why people look for red flags. Like I myself try to analyse his game a lot, because he's like nothing we've seen before, I think, in the Portuguese league. Sometimes I always think this, he looks like if you cast yourself back to like maybe when you were playing FIFA back in the days when you were young, and you were like, right, I think it's time for me to up the difficulty now because it's just too easy. I'm just running, I'm just hitting the shoot button and it just goes in. That's literally where Gyökeres is right now. It just looks so easy because he's literally half the time, I don't think he's thinking much about the angle of his shot. He's just hitting it with raw power.
That's true.
Making sure it's on target and it's going through goalkeepers and stuff like that. But yeah, I just can't explain his success rate at times. But he keeps on doing it and doing it.
I was interested, Patrick, because you briefly touched on the potential debate in terms of where Gyökeres ranks in terms of the league's history, and about I wasn't going to go straight down the barrel and ask that question, like, is he the best the league's ever seen? Because I think there's probably people far more knowledgeable than me on the history of the league to sort of make a judgment. But what you touched on there about his uniqueness in terms of what we've seen, I think for me, perhaps does stand him out compared to, I'm thinking like it's a Falcao and Cardozo in my more recent memory, because of like so the there's so many strings to his bow. Like you mentioned, the shooting, his physicality, but also the way he makes space and his pace. I don't know. And people, like you say, people do question the quality of the league, and all this. But I just think he's unreal. And actually, a question that I thought maybe we could ask and perhaps answer, and is a bit hypothetical, is thinking about how Amorim left Sporting, and that felt like a huge moment for Sporting and a huge loss. I was gonna sort of turn it around and wonder, like, if Jokeres had left at that point and Amorim stayed, do Sporting go on and have an easy title run, or does, just looking at
That's a
the
good
four goals
question.
in this game, the hat trick the last game, like we saw moments with under Amorim where Harder came in and wasn't quite as good. Like, would Jokeres have been the bigger loss? Is I guess my question for you both.
A
It's a
difficult
great
one.
question. Patrick, do you want to go first? Because I think you know a bit better than me.
It is a difficult one. I do feel like looking at the squad now and in terms of harmony and everything, I do feel like the greater weight was behind the manager, Amorim. So if I was to choose, I would say Amorim, because I've always got that faith of, as you say, like the synergy amongst the players is right at the top, is as best as it can be. And I think eventually obviously you wouldn't see Harder get as many goals, but you might see goals more evenly distributed throughout the squad. And of course, with a bit of luck, the amount of injuries that Sporting have had this year has been ridiculous, to be fair. But if like some of those players stay fit, you've got the likes of Pedro Gonçalves and Nuno Santos from the flanks, Jani, Guendouzi, the midfielders, Trincão, who's had a difficult year trying to make up for all this creativity that's been missing around him. He probably is a bit more free and scores more goals. I feel like Amorim is clearly the more competent manager between himself and Rui Borges and João Pedro before them. So I feel like I'd lean towards the manager. But, how do you replace 50 odd goals? It would be a challenge. You could always sign someone else and hope that he at least chips in with half of them. But it's a damn challenge, for sure.
Yeah, I think, do you know what? I think I do lean that same direction. The only reason I say that is because I think it's important to always remind ourselves that Ruben Amorim did win this league without Gyökeres. I always forget that. I know it sounds stupid, but like he won the league without him before. He did great things with Sporting without Victor Gyökeres. I mean, I don't know, maybe Patrick, off the top of your head, but like how many goals did Paulinho score that year when they won the league? Because I don't think it was an awful lot. Like that
No, it
season,
wasn't.
the goals were spread around. So in that sense, I think yeah, the manager probably was the biggest loss. Although I don't think they'll be super happy about losing either of them, naturally. And I know this is the sort of discussion that is had a lot, but I do think it is worth bringing up now, just because of the form that Jokers finds himself in, and the fact, Patrick, you're right to point out it's unique to have a player like him in the league. I also think it's fairly unique to have a situation where, like you say, I don't think anyone's under the illusion that he isn't going to leave in the summer. But equally, I think you'll struggle to find a Sporting fan that's really, like, how can I put it? Like angry or like feels like really negatively about that, like it's a big mistake. I think all Sporting fans at this point, like with the 2 seasons that he's given to the club, will completely understand that like it's his time to leave. This is not a situation like, you find a lot of Benfica fans in this situation because they sell players so quickly. Like for example, when Darwin Nunez left, maybe there were a lot of Benfica fans saying it's too soon. Like if he stays, we can develop him further. I think, to be fair to Sporting as a club, they've given a lot to Victor Gyökeres. They gave him the opportunity to play at the level that he's played at and doing what he is now. But then the player has also given an awful lot back to the club. So it does feel like kind of almost like mutually agreed that it's time to go, and everyone's happy about that, and just happy to see him play at the club. I mean, I'm personally pretty gassed. I saw him in real life, which was pretty crazy. I don't think he did that much though, but still, it was. I think he scored, but still, an amazing experience. So, yeah, a lot of discourse about Gyökeres at the moment, naturally, but still a few games for him to, like you say, Patrick, try and get to that 100 goal mark, which we'll keep an eye on. Of course, the next game we're going to talk about is the Benfica game, which did in fact precede the Sporting game. As you pointed out, Patrick, they beat AVS 6-0, and they really did lay down a marker to Sporting to let them know that there's no room for mistake, because despite obviously that recent setback against Arouca, I think Benfica are ready to put the pressure on ahead of that Clásico on the penultimate day of the season, which we're all very excited about. Maybe Patrick's a bit more nervous about, but we're all looking forward to it. On the game itself, Patrick, obviously 6-0 against AVS, in my opinion, the weakest club in the league on current form, despite league position. The result itself, not unexpected, but I think it's the nature of the result, what it says to the fans and what it says to the players, that's the biggest boost with the season where it is, with only 3 games to go.
Yeah, massive result for Benfica, who will enjoy that. There's just certain times during the season where, like in defense of AVS, there's just certain times in the season where you just don't want to go to the Stade de Luz. And I think this is probably the time where they know that their form's picking up. There's a title at stake right at the very end. Just that Stade de Luz is going to be packed, and it's just going to feel like the most intense thing ever. And that's what it was from the first minute. A bit similar to Sporting. It was just all Benfica. It was just piling on the pressure, piling on the pressure. And a bit like a dog when it's biting, it doesn't want to let go. It just keeps on going and going and going and going. And yeah, it was a torrid time for them. Yeah, the only sort of thing that they can take away from this is the fact that their direct rivals in the relegation scrap is Boavista, and they got pumped 5-0 as well. So it's kind of like 6-0, 5-0. Pick your poison, it all tastes the same. But yeah, it was an absolute, beating. It just never looked like standing a chance at all.
I mean, Ochoa, bless him, was trying his best, but even he couldn't make much of a difference. I mean, again, Barney, similar to Boavista, hard to judge the team based on this result, but I do think AVS's situation is slightly different to Boavista's. I think they've been in bad form for a long time. That's 6 losses, 1 draw in their last 7 games. They've got big games coming up, Barney. They've got Boavista coming up. They've got Estrela Amadora coming up. It's very much do or die now for them in terms of if they're going to stay up. They need results from both those games. I see them as the weakest team in the relegation battle, including Ferenc personally. I feel free to disagree with that, but yeah, it's hard to see the redeeming factors for them. Not just, and again, not just because of this result, but it's a very, very bad run of form at just the wrong part of the season.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you in that, and I do think they are the worst team. I sort of want to see them go because they feel that they've offered. They had moments at the very beginning of the season, didn't they? I think Lucas Piazon got a goal or two, and that was exciting for us. And then they signed Zee Lewis, Jean Machado, the young Ecuadorian I tipped. I've had a few good games, but since then there has been so little seen from them. They're just yeah. I'm looking at some of the names that they brought in. They did go quite big on sort of experience in this league, but those players haven't really been able to flourish. I'm looking at like Adelin Santos, for example, the ex-Real Ave centre back, but he's 36 now. Zee Lewis, as I mentioned, there's a few players there that just yeah, and it that hasn't worked, and they looked for other options, and they haven't come off. Yeah, I mean this was the heavy beating, and I can't see them picking up points for the rest of the season, if I'm honest. I think they're in deep trouble, and I it's yeah, I've never really had an opinion of them about this season. It's been really hard to build, there's a few players in there that caught my eye, but as a team and as the football that they've played, it's never really been something that I've can sort of find any likeness of, really. They've even got a Co in goal, and it's still like still I still have that feeling.
But it is true that they've really struggled to make any kind of impact on the league this season at
Yeah.
all. Which is maybe fair enough. You say they won't get any points for the rest of the season. I remember saying that about Bovista a few weeks ago, and they managed to get two wins in that time. So clearly, the Long Ball Football Podcast predicting you to fail is a good sign. Patrick, I want to ask you another kind of slightly forward, more general question this time about Benfica, because the one thing that's caught my eye, other than the scoreline itself, was the fact that the goals were quite spread out in this game. And we had some interesting goal scorers. You know, we had Zeki Amdouni scoring, we had Belotti scoring, Nicolas Otamendi. It kind of just reminded me that the squad is still in a slightly strange place. There's still kind of characters in that squad that you're not 100% sure what their future is at the club. You know, you think of a player like Amdouni, who signed from the Championship, but after a season in the Premier League. Belotti, who was kind of signed when Pavlidis wasn't quite delivering, that experienced striker, maybe a slightly strange signing in my opinion, coming from the Italian league, and he's done well, I think, when he's played. But with Pavlidis scoring, do they necessarily need him? We're obviously looking at a Benfica team that have really galvanised and are really in a good position and in good form going towards the end of the season. I am still personally kind of left with the feeling, though, that there is still work that needs to be done over the summer if this is going to be built into like a squad and a team that's a lot more cohesive and can really build something kind of very positive going into next season. I'm just wondering how you see it with some of those players, whether you think there'll be players leaving, and if you still think there's work that needs to be done basically with the squad.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I commend them for it because usually when a team is this far into the season fighting for a title, they usually have, guaranteed at least nine players, are going to start. But there's certain players besides the key ones, such as like Kerry and Pavlidis, there's certain positions and key positions as well that one week you see someone, the next week you see the next. And then there might be a report in the newspaper about this player leaving, and then surprise, he starts the next game. Like I think it was Amdouni and Prestiani got some minutes as well after there were some rumors about his future too. But yeah, like there's just lots of key positions that I don't think, besides the general rotation and different horses for different courses type of thing, I don't think Lage has found his ideal set up yet, his ideal players. And we know what transfer windows are like, especially for Portuguese teams. There's minimum five, six, seven, eight new signings. That'll probably be the case again this summer. There'll probably be some big names. They're hoping for some big returns. There's likes of João Félix has been rumored to come back, Bernardo Silva, Nelson Semedo, who they're trying. I think he might stay at Wolves. But there's gonna be certain changes for sure in that Benfica team. But again, going back to my original point, I do really congratulate them on the amount of form that they've managed to pick up in like the last month or two, because being in that situation. And we'll probably touch on that when we come to the Porto game, because I feel like they're in a very similar situation as well. But if you compare the two positions, Benfica are getting results and their performances are improving. It's very difficult to do when you know that the players aren't quite right, or the players themselves know that their position in a team isn't quite right, that they've not settled in the 11. So fair play to them. They're really making something out of their season.
Yeah, definitely. Go on, Barney. What do you think? Because I mean, even if you look at the starting lineup with Carreras and Dahl both starting, and yet there's some players on the bench that didn't make it on. Like Bruma, who's made a good impact, doesn't make it on. But then the manager still uses Cabral, still uses Schlader up. So it's an interesting place. But like Patrick says, crucially for this season, I think largely he's a lot of credit for the way he's like galvanized the team and got in play. Because I think there was even a point where I think people were questioning whether Lage himself would make it to the end of the season.
Well, yeah, I was actually going to highlight those January transfers, because they had that January transfer window, that largest, first window since coming back to the club, and the players that they brought in, like Bruma, was a bit, oh, what's that? Belotti as well, like a lot of people were like, how, where's this transfer come from? And as Dahl, as you mentioned, I was actually going to say all three of those players, Bruma. I can't, it wasn't a, I don't know if it was a winner, but they've all scored goals. They've all contributed, and they've all sort of boost the. They've raised the floor of the squad, right? That you know, there's a bit more quality in the squad. Manu Silva as well, didn't he? I know he got his. He played, was it two games? But he got came off injured. But he, you know, I think he didn't he get an assist in one of those games. It just feels like. I think in the past few seasons, I've been very critical of some of Benfica's transfers, right? And partly of them have been preemptive, and some of them has been very much reactionary. Like, look at Cabral. Some I was quite hyped about Cabral, but obviously that didn't turn out well. But I feel like that those signings have been good. Belotti in particular was one where I was really questioning it, and seeing so many people talk about Belotti's like what like washed up, and I know he hasn't really probably scored important goals. But every
He
time
scored a
he's,
decent amount. He scored a decent amount.
yeah, it's someone that means that you know Cabral wasn't doing this, and it's someone that they can take Pavlidis off for, and he might get a goal, makes it more comfortable, you know, boost the score and up that like this 6-0 win, that's going to give him so much confidence for the running. Like I don't know, I think that has been quite good, and let's be real, like Large is. You know, your original question to Patrick about, you know, the squad looking towards the future. Of course, there's players in there that won't be here next year. And of course, there's players that are in the squad who, you know, you might think, oh, these are guys for the future, but they're not getting minutes at the moment. As Patrick touched on, you know, the reality is Large has suddenly put them in, you know, they've capitalized on Sporting's issues this season, and they're in a title race now. And I think it's thanks to, obviously, thanks to Large, but also thanks to some of those January transfers who have actually, like, you know, on the surface, like quite odd moves, and but actually have done quite well. I think they're, yeah, and I think the main thing was that it's just, like I said, raising the floor of the squad. You know, the quality's got that bit better, and I think that's been, you know, I think that's been partly due to that, like a reason for Benfica's success.
I completely agree. And you know, it's small things as well. Might seem unimportant, might seem trivial to bring up, but even just seeing Belotti's reaction to the goal, he seems delighted to score for this club, even though it's in a game where they're already three, four, five goals up, whatever it is, when he scores against a team in a relegation zone. You know, this isn't a Champions League football. He's just happy to be playing for this club and contributing, which I think is a real credit to him.
And I think we've all touched on it this podcast about the fact that, you know, Sporting would have seen Benfica win 6-0. And in this league, you know, seeing those scorelines from your rival, it does have those little psychological effects. And like, so, you know, Belotti's goals at boosting all those other scorelines up as well. You know, they all have a factor. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I don't want Benfica fans to think I'm bringing this up because I'm trying to look for negatives in any way. But I think the thing for me that I always feel with Benfica is just this sense that they have the potential to build something like really special and really dominant, given the kind of the financial might that they have in this country and selling power and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad they're doing well. I feel like, of course, I feel like they could build a better squad and build something a bit more impressive. But the impressive work that the manager and the players are doing in this second part of the season is what's got them to where they are now, in with a real possibility of winning the title. And I think, in a way, that at the beginning of the season, before Amorim left, you probably would have said was very, very unlikely. So yeah, that's a real credit to them. Porto fans, I apologize. We are now going to deal with your game. It was a very, very poor result from Porto's perspective, as they were beaten 2-0 by Estrela Amadora. For me, comfortably the worst Porto performance under Anselmi since he joined. A game where they could have easily conceded more goals than two. But a fantastic day for Estrela, who moved 5 points clear of the relegation playoff. It's a win that means mathematically they cannot be relegated in the automatic places, which is a huge boost for them. Undoubtedly, the result and probably performance of the season from them. Barney, go on. I'll start you off with Estrela, and let's give them some credit because they absolutely flew out of the blocks, and I don't think Porto really knew what hit them, because the chances they had in the opening minutes, I think the first goal came in after half an hour or something, but they could have scored one or two before, long before that.
Yeah, they were fantastic. It was a really well, you know, that was it was obviously a clear plan for them to go hard and fast at the beginning because it just didn't let Porto get into any sort of rhythm. And I think if that's one thing Anselmi has brought is that, you know, they usually have quite a lot of control over the games and a lot of possession, but they just did not have that with Estrella. They were so smart and the sort of the pace they basically exploited the pace around the back. Zé Pedro had come into the back line, so you had him, Estacio, and Marcano. Well, none of those players are really blessed for speed, and so Estrella were just putting balls in behind him. Kikas's pace was great, Cabral as well, Buga, and they were just, yeah, it's Porto that's shell shocked. They really did, and I don't know. Yeah, I was look. You know, I look at the midfield of Varela and Fabio Vieira, and it just feels, you know, that that's not. It just felt that they were able to play through that midfield. But you know, I'm looking at players like Ruiz had a great game for Estrella, and you know, he was pulling strings. He was great. The midfield was, yeah, really good, and they were fantastic. They should have scored more.
They should.
Defensively, they were good as well. They didn't give them any chances really. I think most of Porto's shots were from outside the
Barney,
box.
the keeper didn't have anything to do.
He didn't.
Crazy.
It did. Yeah, they just they you know, Drame, I think, was yeah, really good at centre back, and it was, yeah, but a performance like sort of out of the blue for Estrella, right? It's sort of
Completely.
everything they did in this game is what they haven't been doing all season.
Yeah.
Like they, you know,
Hundred
they're right up there for the amount of chances they give the other team. They're right down there in terms of chances created for themselves, and yet they got their like highest XG of the season in this game. It's just, yeah, an incredible twist. And you know, to put a bit of perspective on it, this is probably the result that will keep them up out of danger.
definitely.
Like a huge result for them and a great performance. Yeah, they were fantastic.
Yeah, Patrick, surely you didn't see this one coming. I mean, I'm interested to hear what you think, like where the result came from both teams' perspectives, if you like. I mean, I was looking more at Estrella and I just thought some wonderful individual performances. Barney pulls out Alan Ruiz, completely running it back. I mean, great performance from him. And Kikas, I swear, Kikas is one of these guys. He only scores in like the last five games of the season. I swear it was the same last season where they needed to try and survive relegation. He popped up with a few goals in the last five games. But credit to Joran Cabral as well. Again, another player who has had some difficulties. Some excellent individual performances from Australia.
Yeah, for sure. And whether I saw it coming or not, I don't know. Because, as you say, at this time of the season, the teams like floating around the bottom that still have that glimmer of hope or still have something to do to finish the job off. You could always, I feel like you should always expect them to do something unexpected. And especially looking at Porto right now, I feel like it became the perfect storm for Amadora, because not only are you playing a big team, which means all eyes are on you for a day, it's a big team that's unsure of itself at the moment. I don't know whether the identity is fully set in with the new manager. And I think that shows in their organisation in some ways, particularly defensively. And I think last time I was here, we mentioned how frail they looked defensively, even with three centre halves, with that ball down the sides. And that's everything that Amadora went for. They went for the not just the ball down the channels, but also through the middle as well. Like I felt like Porto just looked so lost, with Eustáquio stuck between the two centre halves. It was like a hologram almost. Like they weren't actually there. It was so poor from a Porto's perspective. The only thing I was surprised about was the fact that Amadora went for it from the very first minute. Basically, they were just like, right, let's set the tempo like Benfica did, like Sporting did. Let's do the job and get it done. But yeah, they for a good like 30 minutes at least, like Porto had the biggest headache. And fair play to Amadora, they deserve it 100%. Huge result. It's probably the result they will look back on now this season as the moment of the season, the moment secured safety. There's obviously still a little bit of work left to do for them, but it puts them in a much stronger position now, for sure. So yeah, congrats to them. But for Porto, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there.
Yeah, and on Porto, because my thing recently, since Anselmi's been come in, is I had the impression, or my opinion, I was of the opinion that I'd seen improvement from them in almost every game since Anselmi came in, and you know, I definitely thought that with him as the manager, it was kind of progression would be made, and over the summer, if they brought in new players, then they'd have a good opportunity to build something good for next season. With that said, do you think this result is just like a blip, like a one-off? They got it wrong. The players didn't handle the surprise, and then they'll move on. Or do you think it's kind of representative of perhaps the fact that there are still like quite big issues with the team?
I think it's a bit of both. I think we're looking again a club that's in a transitional period from the past, like the last presidency. It's new territory for Porto to have a new president. Like it's a completely new world, and with like so many pockets of the fan base not agreeing despite the results. Like so many of them don't agree with the direction the club has taken now. I feel like the ghosts will always creep up, and there will always be fans that are more reminiscent of yesteryear. And fair enough, like because when we're talking about a team like Porto, we are talking about serial winners, and every defeat that they have, it's like a stab in the back type of thing, which is cruel for someone like Anselmi who comes in with an idea of playing a certain way, and perhaps some of the players that he's been left with don't really fit that model quite well yet. I think we can compare it a little bit to Ruben Amorim's situation at Man United, where he's got a similar situation. He has this idea, this model that he wants to play, but the players don't really fit. But it's kind of like, what do you just grind out results, or do you start planting your seeds now and just grow now? I think it's that sort of similar conundrum that he'll have, and I think it's something he has to sort of judge for himself. Will he get the patience that he requires at Porto to do that? I think after the game it was like mass brawls and stuff like that, which probably suggests that Porto fans aren't as patient as he might have thought, or those around him would have thought. So it's an interesting one. I do feel like it is a bit of an unfortunate situation, but there's just no avoiding it. I think in Portugal anyway, whether it's Porto, whether it's Benfica, whether it's Sporting, I feel like in Portugal they focus so much on results more than anywhere else probably. You can't have you can't have a long period of instability, or even a medium term of instability. You kind of have to figure your stuff out like pretty sharpish. And I think if he doesn't, then eventually his head will roll.
I was asked by a Porto fan recently whether how long I thought he'd last, you know, which kind of gives you an idea of where their heads are. And for me, I think they have to give him at least one more window, because otherwise, what's the point in bringing a manager like that in if you're not gonna give him the time? But yeah, we'll see.
Can I come in there? Because I think, I instinctively I want to agree with you, but I think if looking at this game, that we're starting to, we can talk about the squad he's been left with, we can talk about the time he's had with the squad, etc. But there's decisions he's made which is, I think we can question, and there's a clear result. So the whole Dennis Gould starting this game and Samuel on the bench, like what was going on there? Like Samuel's been his best striker, Dennis Gould didn't do much, and then to ship him off at half time, like. And bring Samuel on, sort of almost admitting his mistake. I think other things as well, like, that he can be braver in some of the squad selection. Mora and João Mário always on the fullback positions, the wing backs, whatever. But But we've seen, like, even we even saw Vitor Bruno play Galeno at left back in some games and get results, you know, which he can afford to do in this league. We've said it before, and there just seems to be, you know, I think Willian came on for, is it, was it his debut, you know, the Brazilian winger they signed in January, but a player that you could play at the left fullback position in some of these games in the league against this, you know, weaker opposition. I mean, to highlight the points per game, for Vitor Bruno, finished his tenure on Porto with a 1.97 points per game. You know, Anselmi's currently on 1.67, which is like one of the lowest a Porto manager has had in years. So, like, I don't know. I wonder if he seems to be a bit out of his depth. And I'll go back to that point about, you know, I think he's got to be braver and pick some players and try and do something a bit more creative, because, you know, they have all this possession. I think they're ranked highest in the league for the amount of possession, but their chance creation is so poor. You know, the stuff isn't, they're not creating anything. And I think, you know, that's partly due to the sort of sticking with those defensive fullbacks and some of his midfield selections, which I don't think have been right.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. It's a very fair point. And yes, but, you know, not the season that Porto fans wanted. And as you said, Patrick, a lot of anger at the end of the game. We don't usually get into the tabloid news, but there was also all that stuff with Otavio's birthday party going down, which I think made people a bit angrier as well. So, you know, never a dull moment in the
Oh,
Portuguese
people got
league.
to be able to celebrate their birthday, man. Come
I agree. But look, just to end it, bringing it back to Estrella again, an incredible performance for them. And you're right to point out that definitely a win that could almost virtually see them safe. You get the feeling that one more win, if they can, in the next three games will be enough to do it. So congratulations to them, and a real credit to their team and a great club. I do like Estrella, so happy to see them with a good result. All right, let's try and do a couple more games before we go. Very quickly, let's do Famalicão versus Braga, because of course Braga drew 1-1 with Famalicão in what at the time seemed like quite a disappointing result, but obviously with the Porto game that followed, it turned out to be a valuable point in Braga's bid to finish in third place. It puts them 1 point above Porto. That said, not a particularly impressive performance for me from Braga. In fact, I do think it was a pretty scrappy game overall. Famalicão went ahead through a penalty, and then Braga equalised in the second half. In my opinion, both teams probably had more than enough chances to score again. One of the teams could have won, but it did turn out to be a pretty, like a scrappy affair, Patrick, I think it's fair to say. I mean, the interesting question for me is the fact that I keep saying Braga maybe are not doing quite as well as they could do, perhaps slightly underperforming, and yet we could well see them finish third in the league, which would be a great result for them.
Yeah, it is a strange season, and I guess part of it is down to Porto as well, stat run as much as they have been. But I think for sure, like we'd all agree, we've seen much better Braga sides, not just results wise, but also in the football that they played. I think this weekend they looked very flat, and I get it. Like Famalicão is a very difficult place to go to because they're a good side, well within their rights to assert their dominance on a side like Braga. When they come to their place, but it just looked like a type of performance where you just look at the team, the manager, his ideas, and you think something's not right here. Something isn't clicking, and that's never good in the type of situation, as you say. Like when you're chasing something, when you're chasing third place, when you're chasing a title or what have you, whatever your goal is, it's never a good position to be in when you're left wondering something is really wrong at the moment. And I feel like that was the ambiance that was around Braga, even when they equalized. And I think they did finish quite strongly towards the end. They probably could have nicked a win. But had they done that, they probably would have thought like phew, like wow. It didn't really look like it was gonna go our way. But yeah, they would have come away from that thinking, right, we fumbled that. Porto are going to go Estrela
Exactly.
and do the job. But you know, football works in weird ways, I guess. Yeah, it's a point gained rather than 2 points lost for them, which just goes to show every point matters.
As Dave Pereira, a good friend of the show, always says, things change fast in football. Barney, Famalicão, I mean, They are currently seventh. They're 7 points off fifth. Not bad at all. But I feel like we had perhaps expectations or hopes that they might have a bit more of a challenge on fifth place, just given some of the players they've got. I mean, it's been, of course, a very decent season, but yeah, I feel like slightly underwhelming.
Yes, I think there, as quite often happens with Famalicão, perhaps we got a bit too comfortable in the fact that they seem to, at the end of last season, beginning of this season, seem to have kept the large majority of their squad together, and that felt like that was quite rare for them. And then, of course, they have the January window, and then Zaidu Yusuf goes, and then seeing this team against Braga, like there's quite a few names in there that I'm not too familiar with, to be honest. Who it does feel like that squad has transitioned quite a bit. That being said, I think lovely to see De Haas on penalties, the centre back who's been a really good centre back for them.
You're just
I
saying
always,
that because he's in your fantasy team, Barney.
I don't know if he is, I can't remember, but I just love it when a centre back's on pens. I think that's great. But no, and the Gustavo Stars sort of been that consistent player for them. They've had Aranda started for them up front a few times. They just went with Alicia in this game. They've lots of different players are coming in and out of the squad, and I think that's sort of down to why they haven't been as high up the table as we've liked would have hoped for. So yeah, I guess that comes sort of the same old Famalicão, right? I did want to talk about Roger Fernandes for Braga, though, Albert, because I think he changed the game for them. He was out for injury for a long time. I think at the time I put his loss, his injury, I thought would sort of be the nail in the coffin for Braga if any chance of coming third. And of course they've had this sort of good upturn in form, and then he's come back in as well, and he sort of changed it for them in this game, I feel. So I think that's gonna, that's really gonna go in their favour. And then the only other player I wanted to highlight, Albert, was Fran Navarro. It's been a really disappointing move. What could have been, and I was really hopeful this would be a good move for him, but it hasn't quite come off. And I think maybe another thing for Braga, where they haven't as been, although they're sitting third currently, I think striking position has been a real issue for them as well this year.
Yeah, well, when you lose a player like Banza, it's always going to be tough to replace him. I feel like Famalicão versus Braga kind of brings up. We had some good games. I mean, there was that 3-3 earlier in the season, which was pretty crazy. It seems like it's always an interesting matchup. I mean, this one was a bit of a dirge, but in general, it's not a bad little fixture. Lastly, then, gents, I want to touch on Vitória versus Rio Ave. Luis Ferreira overcoming his former club as they won 3-0. Three first half goals gave Vitória all 3 points. It keeps Vitória in fifth place. My sense is that these are two teams in some ways heading in different directions at the moment. I feel like Vitória are growing under Ferreira, maybe a little bit slowly than they would like, but they are improving. Whereas for me, Rio Ave have underperformed all season, and since Petit was appointed, I don't think we've seen any particular bounce or improvement. So perhaps in recent seasons, this would have been a game where we considered it kind of a close fixture. But on the day in this game, I think one team was clearly the better team. And I think that's kind of indicative of where they're at the moment. Yeah, Patrick, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it was the type of game that was like, I don't know. You come in and you score that own goal that they did. It was a fluke, but it was pretty nice own goal. In fairness, I do like seeing own goals like that. They're just quite special in that sort of way. But I mean, what are the chances that a goal like that happens for you? And then straight after that, João Mendes hits an absolute banger.
It's fantastic.
I love him, man. He's so good.
Yeah, he's not the first time he's hit one like that, is it?
No,
But
not at all.
he's a special player. But yeah, from a Rio Ave's perspective, yeah, Vitória did start very strongly, but the goals you concede are kind of like out of this world type of goals, like in terms of an own goal and a shot from miles away. So all of a sudden, you're backs against the wall. You've got a long uphill run to get up from, and it's just it was all Vitória psychologically from there, and I was really impressed at times, actually, with the way that they were pinging the ball about, like between players. I think the third goal especially was so well worked. And yeah, bit by bit, I think you will start to see a lot of the players shine, because there's a lot of individual quality in that Vitória team. And I do agree with you up to a point where it does look like two sides that are going in different directions. Obviously, luckily for Juve, they have quite an ambitious backing financially, and we'll see what happens in the summer with them. It could be a situation where they, obviously, with that kind of help and those kinds of resources, they can change things for themselves. We'll see. But Vitória, it's nice to see them going in the right direction as well, because they are such an important club for Portuguese football, fourth slash fifth biggest team in the country, and it's important that they are, I think, for competitive reasons, it's important that they are healthy and they are growing in a way that they can challenge, for fourth and third, and make the competition richer. So I was pretty pleased for them with a result like that, because it did look like it looked like there was more to come from them in a similar vein to what we saw this weekend. So good result for them.
Yeah, totally. Go on, Brian. What did you think?
Oh no, I think Vitória are finishing the season really strongly, and I think yeah, there's players that we've highlighted a lot of times in this podcast that are really finding their feet. I think I haven't talked about it too much, but Relvas coming to the back line, I've liked. I think that's been a good signing for them for the future. They had Villanueva there previously, the sort of left side of play, centre back, but he was getting on. I think Relvas, yeah, he's looked good since he's come in. But the point I had one point I wanted to bring about Rio, because I know we've talked a lot about them, and I've just been adding it up, and they've got like I know we keep saying the same thing, but there's 14 players in on loan, out of a squad of 27, and I've what came into my head today was something that I saw like a couple of months ago, and it was when Jonathan Panzo, the English centre back on loan from Forest. And there was I think it was on VS Sports YouTube channel, and they just sort of did a flash interview at the end of the game. And obviously, it was in the report was sort of speaking in English, which wasn't their first language, obviously. And then, and Panzo's replies were just quite, yeah, the big, I think they'd won, and I think he had scored. And of course, he was going to be happy, but it just felt like, it was almost like he was a bit like, what is going on? Like, what's this? Like, it was just like, and I think. I'm not criticizing Panzo in this comment, but I think what I'm trying to get at is like he was a bit like it's almost like a bit like what am I doing here? Like what this is, and I do wonder if some of those there's quite a few of those players who what is their drive, and if you've got a Portuguese manager, of course there's going to be translation issues and sort of getting the points across and stuff, and obviously the squad as a whole is there's such an eclectic mix of players from all different countries. Where's the gel? Like, where are people gelling? Like, it just I just get the I just wonder, if there are quite a few players like just sort of a bit lost. Like, what am I doing in my career? I've just been sent out on loan from one of the Maranhenses clubs, and like, I'm just here in Portugal, and what's my focus? What's my drive? And perhaps particularly on Panzo, right? Because his that loan move isn't really, in my opinion, to further his career. It's more of like sort of getting some wages off the books for Forest, right? And I know. I perhaps it's an old point we've brought up a few times before, but I just feel like it's the Rio project is interesting, but they're not doing it right at the moment.
No, do you know what? I think it is actually a very fair point to make about, you do see the situation in football a lot, don't you, when a powerful owner takes over a smaller club, and maybe there's a lot of excitement, but then you also have to think about what that owner's intentions may be. Do they really have the long-term ambition to build that into a powerful and successful club in its own right? Or is it more ownership of convenience, whereby they can use that relationship to sign players in from different leagues, maybe with work permit issues, all that kind of stuff, and to move players around amongst their network of clubs. I do think that is a fair point. And how much can you really build, like you say, Barney, when there are a lot of players on loan, and there are probably players there who, for whom this wasn't exactly their dream move that they really saw coming, and maybe they don't feel themselves that this is their long-term future. So that is a very fair point. And I think it will be interesting to see over, like you say, Patrick, over the summer, what they do and how the club looks next season. I remember, Barney, we both spoke to the, forgive me, I forgot the name of it. It was a Forest podcast, the guy we spoke to on there. And I remember when I chatted to him, he was saying how it seemed to be that Rio Ave was almost like more of a project for Marinakis' son, who is going to be more the one involved. And I remember at the time, kind of a little few alarm bells ringing there, thinking, is this a real serious project, or is this, a little pet project for someone? So let's see, because it has only been one season, and I think there's no one can deny that they haven't backed the club, because the signings have been very good, and clearly there's a standard of player that's been brought in that I think we wouldn't have seen in recent seasons without that ownership. And also, let's not give the wrong impression. They did make some very smart signings, like we saw Tiago Moraes coming on loan from Lille. That's a very smart signing, young Portuguese player coming back to Portugal to play. Kiko Mondoso, who'd done well previously in the Portuguese league, who came in, another smart signing. So it's not just a load of rejects from other clubs. There has been some shrewd signings. But yeah, I think the overall point that there's been a lot of change, and maybe that has made it harder to gel, is a very valid one. So yeah, definitely an interesting club to follow now, but certainly an interesting club to follow as long as the ownership is there. We'll see how it goes. I just want to end by saying again on Vitória, you're right, Barney. It's a great patch of form at the end of the season, and if you look at their last six games, it's four wins, a draw, and the only loss was the game to Benfica. Now, we didn't cover that game last week, but I think everyone would agree that they were very unlucky in that game. That wasn't really a 3-0 game. So the performances have been very good. Yeah, I agree with you, Patrick. Great to see a team that is a really important team for this league doing well. And Luis Ferreira, good young manager that I would like to see do well as well. So could be a good match. Gents, I think we're just about out of time. So let's leave it there for this week's podcast. Patrick, a big thank you once again for joining us. Only a few games left, but I'm sure we'll definitely get you on again before the season ends. Maybe if Sporting are successful, we'll invite you on to gloat.
Let's hope. It'd be nice. It'd be nice.
All right. Well, just leaves me to say thank you very much to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.